This podcast is brought to you by Audible.com, the internet's leading provider of audiobooks with more than 100,000 downloadable titles across all types of literature and featuring audio versions of many New York Times bestsellers. For listeners of this podcast, Audible is offering a free audiobook to give you a chance to try out their service. For a free audiobook of your choice, go to audiblepodcast.com/sword. That's audiblepodcast.com/sword.
Podcast is part of the Frog Pants Studios Network. For more information about this and other shows, visit frogpants.com. Audio program so good, it's like you're there.
Everyone, welcome to the Sword and Laser, episode number 102. I'm Veronica Belmont.
And I'm Tom Merritt.
And this is the audio podcast where we discuss the latest in science fiction and fantasy, talk about the book of the month, and listen to your audience feedback.
Yes, and we're kind of extremely nervous because...
Don't even talk about it!
We do a video show on YouTube that's a version of this show for the book club. And next Tuesday, we're interviewing... a very famous fantasy author who has a TV show.
He does have a TV show. His name is George R. R. Martin, and we are interviewing him, and I am scared.
At least it's over Skype.
Yes. I don't know which is worse.
Actually, it'd be better to be in person.
It would be better to be in person.
He seems like a very calming person. Yeah. We should have some trenchers and a thin leek soup and some venison.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. We'll get Suzanne to make that, our production coordinator, Suzanne.
Yeah, maybe for our craft services.
She makes excellent snacks,
yeah,
among all the other myriad things that she does wonderfully. And so I'm hoping that we can organize some kind of theme snack tray for this episode that George R. R. Martin will not be able to enjoy because he'll be there over Skype.
Actually, that would be kind of rude. We're like just chowing down on beef trenchers. Oh, hey, George.
We will need to take your questions from the audience, of course.
Yes, we will post that up on the Goodreads forum. Be looking for that. Mm-hmm. I'm sure we will have no shortage of questions, though.
But in the meantime, this past week, we had the authors behind James S.A. Corey on the show, who, of course, were the authors of Leviathan Wakes. That's Ty Frank and Daniel Abraham. And we had a great interview with them. And I'm just so fascinated by the fact that so many sci-fi fantasy writers come from a role-playing game background.
Yeah, like, it just keeps coming up over and over again, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm, it does. Almost every single interview we've done, at least for the video show, has had a very that tie-in over and over again.
And we've had it in interviews on the audio show. Scott Lynch said it. Mm-hmm. Patrick Rothfuss said it. I feel like maybe Joe Abercrombie mentioned that.
I feel like he did. Yeah.
Yeah.
But maybe I'm wrong.
So it's at least for fantasy, particularly, mm-hmm, it's a common way to build a world that you can then set your story in.
Yeah, or you actually learn the basics of world building when you're going about planning planning campaigns like that.
So watch Tabletop with Will Wheaton, and then you'll become a famous author afterwards.
There you go. Bring it all back together again.
Guaranteed.
Another Geek and Sundry show there. So anyways, but back to the regular audio show. We always kick off the episode with what are we drinking. So Tom, what are you drinking tonight?
I think I may have had this before, but I'm having a 2008 Shiraz from the Red Diamond Winery in Washington. It is a fairly average Shiraz, but I don't mean that in a bad way. It's, you know, it's a good table wine.
Mm. Well, speaking of fairly average Shiraz, I am also drinking one such wine. However, this is from the esteemed Charles Shaw Vineyard.
Oh, how many bucks did you pay for that?
Roughly two. No, it's actually three now. They're $2.99 a bottle.
It's still two in Novato.
Really?
Just so you know, when you're driving home from recording the video podcast.
Mm-hmm. I'll keep that in mind next time. And hey, oh, you know, I should say this. I've never said this before, but I think it would be fun. If anyone's in Petaluma or is stopping by the area and you want to come sit in on a taping, I think we could make that happen.
Actually, we could.
I think that would be fun.
Email feedback at swordandlaser.com. We record the show the Tuesday before it posts on YouTube. So every other Tuesday. Mm-hmm. And the fine folks at Pixel Core are very accommodating, very friendly. So and awesome at putting together our show, obviously. Mm-hmm. We love them. So they'd be happy to have you.
Tom's going to pull me aside after this episode and be like, why did you invite strangers? Stranger danger.
Do you know these people?
Thanks, Tom.
Becca, care of that. It's fine.
Yeah, oh, yeah, Becca, our fabulous intern, Becca, Bearhead Becca, as I call her.
Yay, Becca.
She's also a bouncer. Little known fact.
Becca the bouncer.
Yeah, I mean, she's tiny, but she's very strong.
She's mighty.
Yeah, she's the mighty Bearhead Becca. Anyway, let's move on to the quick burns. Starting off on a sad note, of course, the recent passing of famed and esteemed author Ray Bradbury.
I was very sad to hear Bradbury passing. On the other hand, he was 91 years old, so he definitely lived a very long and productive life. It's not like he was struck down in his prime. So it's a bittersweet. Sort of like, well, no one can live forever, but thank goodness we have such wonderful writing from him to enjoy. I differed with him on a lot of philosophical issues, especially in these later years when he was withholding ebooks for various reasons. But the books are going to be published electronically. That was not something he was dead set against. Mm-hmm. And there are other philosophical issues, but I differed with him. But I loved his writing. I Fahrenheit 451, Martian Chronicles, among others, fantastic stories.
In fact, there is a thread over on Goodreads right now about some of your favorite Ray Bradbury books, as started by Bernardo. And he is very sad about the passing of Ray Bradbury. His favorite stories from him are, as you mentioned, The Martian Chronicles, Something Wicked This Way Comes, and Sound of Thunder. So if you have a personal favorite, head over to Goodreads in our forums and jot down that one and share your Ray Bradbury memories. In fact, Pierin, who does our excellent whiteboard videos for the show, he has a very long, very sweet memory of meeting Mr. Bradbury. So it's a good read.
That's cool.
Mm-hmm. So one thing that I'm very excited about today, so excited in fact that I gave my own personal well-earned money.
How much did you give? You outbid me, didn't you?
Yes, I did.
How much did you become like a supporting member or something? We should tell them what we're talking about.
Okay, so Neal Stephenson, who
friend of the show?
Friend of the show, I would call him.
Who's drank a Guinness while on a treadmill on our Google Hangout?
Yes, that would be a good way to describe him. He is a, of course, fantastic author. And during the writing of the Mongoliad, now I have a sense that he was into this far beyond that, just that experience, but I know for a fact that during the writing of the Mongoliad, they had a lot of experience learning about fighting and specifically swordcraft.
And Stevenson, you know what's funny is Nicole Carrico on Tech News Today reminded me of this fact. Stevenson was talking about sword fighting back on the Screensavers when he was interviewed then.
Okay, then
and
there
if you
go,
think
proof.
About it, in Snow Crash, the katana is a huge part of that. So I think he's been into sword fighting for a long time.
And so he's putting out a game, and he's funding it via Kickstarter called Clang. And it's an obsessively detail-oriented game about sword fighting. And so they're also opening up their API for other developers. So if other developers, game developers, want to use their sword fighting technology in their own game, they can do so. But they are also coming out with a real game.
And yeah, the idea is to create a better way for sword fighting to be represented in gaming in general, because shooting is so detailed and sword fighting is not. So Clang is going to be an arena game that will allow you to fight with a two-handed broadsword, at least at the beginning. But they want to create this API so that it's adaptable if other people want to use it for other types of swords or other types of games, and hopefully a lot of people build on it, and it just helps sword fighting in video games improve.
And what I think is really fascinating is that it is not going to use a traditional controller. It's going to use, quote, a low-latency, high-precision motion controller to give people the kind of deep physical gameplay that isn't possible with a stick-and-button gamepad.
But so, something that's available consumer level, they're not making some crazy, weird, really expensive thing.
Right. And I don't know anything about what kind of platform it's going to be, if it's going to be Kinect, if it's going to be Move, if it's going to be Wii. We don't really know yet. as far as I can tell.
Sounds like it's PC based right now, but yeah, they haven't decided where it would be ported to. It's too early in the process. They basically need to get $500,000 by July 9th to actually bring in the programmers who would make those kinds of decisions.
So time is running out. I mean, it is already June 11th. So they've got about a month plus to get $500,000 together. So what did you donate? You don't have to tell me if you don't want to.
$5.
$5. Yeah. You donated $5.
I did. Now I'm embarrassed.
Don't be embarrassed. You can always donate more money.
That's so true.
If you want to, they're just about to hit $200,000.
I want to support this, but I don't really need the game yet. I'll just buy the game later. So I just wanted to give a little money. You know?
I donated $150.
Did you really?
Yes.
Man, you so shamed me. I have to go back and donate.
I really wanted the print edition of the Illustrated Clang Fighting Manual.
Ah, see, I was trying to avoid that because I've just spent a lot of money on a bunch of other things. And I was like, well, I can give $5.
I donated more to Singularity.
All right. We just bought an elliptical machine. I know. I've broken Veronica.
Sorry, I'm getting over a cold. I'm not laughing at your elliptical machine. I'm just laughing at... See, now everyone's going to be like, oh, Veronica just has money to throw around. I don't buy a lot of stuff. I just like to support these things. I'm like a Kickstarter addict.
If we hadn't just made such a large purchase, I probably would have been more generous.
I have to say, every Kickstarter that I've donated to has been funded. So I'm on a good...
You're on a roll.
On a good kick right now.
Nice.
Let me share with you some of the things. I
supported Simple TV.
Oh, I did the Leisure Suit Larry game.
Nice.
I did Singularity & Co. I did the Smooth Federation on All-Star Jazz Star Trek tribute album.
Oh, I did that one too.
And I also did Superpowered Revenge Christmas, which was Len Peralta's thing.
Oh, yeah. I did that one too, actually. Mm-hmm. I forgot about it.
So yeah, I've been having a blast with Kickstarter lately because you get all this really cool stuff and you get all these extra cool things.
Yeah. And so, you get to feel like, hey, I helped make this happen.
And so many of them are friend related that I like helping out. So I guess that's part of my deal.
I may have a Kickstarter thing soon with Scott Johnson.
Oh,
maybe. Might be announcing.
Now that you know how much I spent on Neil Stephenson, you're going to really expect.
Oh, I'm not yet.
Yeah,
no, you don't have to. No, it's not going
to
require that much generosity, unless you want to.
Unless I want to, of course.
I mean, I'm not Neil Stephenson. Believe me.
No. But anyway, we've been talking extensively about this, so we should.
Yeah, let's congratulate some Nebula Award winners, shall we?
We shall. Yes, it's very exciting. Novel winner, among others, by Joe Walton. I think that was kind of expected. I think that was kind of the forerunner for novel winner. For the Nebulas this year.
Also, The Man Who Bridged the Mist won the Novella Prize by Keej Johnson.
Mm-hmm. For novelette winner, What We Found by Jeff Ryman. Short story winner, The Paper Menagerie by Ken Liu.
And I absolutely 100% support this. The Ray Bradbury Award for Outstanding Dramatic Presentation, which usually goes to script writing. Neil Gaiman, The Doctor's Wife, an episode of Doctor Who, which was brilliant.
Nice, nice. And then the Andre Norton Award for Young Adult Science Fiction and Fantasy Book Winner, The Freedom Maze by Delia Sherman.
And I these other awards are kind of the more like lifetime achievement type awards, mm-hmm. but the... 2011 Damon Knight Grandmaster Award to Connie Willis, the Solstice Award to Octavia Butler, posthumous, of course, and John Clute, and Service to SFWA Award to Bud Webster. Congratulations to all the Nebula Award winners.
Congrats, and good luck to all the people who are going to write amazing stuff in 2012 and be nominated for the next awards. Looking forward. And so then there's another article that you selected from IO9. This is the 1960s science fiction novels everyone should read. So this is like standard reading.
Yeah, Annalie Newitz wrote this one up, but IO9 does such a great job of these feature articles that sort of remind you of books that are out there that you may have forgotten about or didn't even know about. And this one says, look, 1960s are awesome. I wonder if Annalie was watching Mad Men and came up with this idea. Maybe, maybe not.
Maybe.
But here are books from the 60s that if you haven't read and you're a science fiction fan, you absolutely should pick up. I've read a lot of these, but not all of them. And I think not this July, but maybe we should do a 60s pick for one of these science fiction months. Kurt Vonnegut's Slaughterhouse-Five, obviously just a great literary novel altogether, but a science fiction novel as well. Babel 17 by Samuel R. Delaney. The Drowned World by J.G. Ballard, also very literary. Anne McCaffrey, The Ship Who Sang, science fiction from Anne McCaffrey, which we talked about with Todd McCaffrey from the 60s. My favorite book of all time, The Man in the High Castle by Philip K. Dick, the alternate universe where the Nazi Germany and Japan win World War II. The Left Hand of Darkness by Ursula K. Le Guin is probably considered her classic. We've read The Moon is a Harsh Mistress on Sword and Laser. Solaris by Stanislaw Lem, the book I should have had you read instead of Memoirs Founded About Death.
And I find it kind of adorable that one of the books I lemmed and the author for who Lem is named are right next to each other on this list. But I know Solaris is a classic, so I'm not, no diss on Solaris.
Then A Wrinkle in Time by Madeleine L'Engle, kids book, great book. Joanna Russ, Picnic on Paradise, 2001 A Space Odyssey by Arthur C. Clarke. And of course, Dune by Frank Herbert.
Yay, Dune, which is one of our very early picks here on the Sword Laser. All right, so let's go to the calendar. A lot of good stuff coming, and we should really do some more events, too, and add those to the calendar, and I think we'll get to some more of that later. But June 12th, The Shadowed Sun by N.K. Jemisin. Gurajra, The City of Dreams. I'm probably really mispronouncing that. Thanks,
I think it's
Nora.
Gujara, but
Gujara, Gujara, Gujara.
Yeah.
Gujara, the City of Dreams, suffers under the imperial rule of the Kuzati Protectorate, a city where the only law was peace now knows violence and oppression. And nightmares. A mysterious and deadly plague haunts the citizens of Gujara, dooming the infected to die screaming in their sleep. Trapped between dark dreams and cruel overlords, the people yearn to rise up, but Gujara has known peace for too long.
Has it now. June 19th, The Long Earth by Terry Pratchett and Stephen Baxter. 1916, The Western Front, France. Private Percy Blakeney wakes up. He's lying on fresh spring grass. He can hear birdsong, et cetera, et cetera. Then also
you sound so bored reading it. Come on.
In Madison, Wisconsin, cop Monica Jansen has returned to the burned out home of one Willis Lanzi. It takes place across both
times.
The past and the future. With lots of cool stuff, and it's Terry Pratchett. I don't need to sell it. It's awesome.
We also have Existence by David Brin on June 19th, of course. In the maelstrom of worldwide shared experience drops a game changer. An alien artifact is plucked from Earth's orbit, an artifact that wants to communicate. News leaks out fast, and the world reacts as it always does, with fear and hope and selfishness and love and violence.
Also on June 19th, The Devil Delivered and Other Tales by Steven Erickson. That's a short story collection. And Survivors, one of the Morningstar train books by Z.A. Reicht. If you like action-packed zombie extravaganzas, you'll want to pick that up.
Very cool. And we also have an event. The Philip K. Dick Festival is happening up here in the Bay Area. That is September 22nd to 23rd. Tell me a little bit about this, Tom. I think you were looking forward to this. I am a big Philip K. Dick fan,
as you probably have known if you've listened to this podcast much at all. And I didn't realize that the PKD scholars and fans are having their largest gathering ever in San Francisco September 22nd through the 23rd.
Whee!
And the guest of honor will be Jonathan Lethem, the editor for Philip K. Dick's three volumes from the Library of America editions, an editor of the Exegesis of Philip K. Dick from Houghton Mifflin, and he's a novelist who maybe you know in his own right as well. Other confirmed guests include Pam Jackson, editor of the Exegesis as well, Eric Davis, annotations editor for the Exegesis, and John Simon, director of Radio Free Album.
Tom, what was that word?
The Exegesis. I know I'm not saying it right, too. Somebody's going to write in, as I say it, and I'm going to be like, okay.
Is that how you think the listeners sound, Tom?
I know. The correcting ones. The well-actually ones.
The well-actuallys. Fair enough. That sounds like a lot of fun.
Lots of other people that we're not mentioning are showing up as too. It sounds like they're going to have some great panels. So if you're into it at all, it's going to be $35 a day or $50 for the entire weekend, and it will be held at San Francisco State University.
More Philip K. Dick than you can shake a stick at this festival. We want to take some time to thank our sponsor. This podcast is brought to you by Audible.com, the internet's leading provider of audiobooks with more than 100,000 downloadable titles across all types of literature and featuring audio versions of many of the New York Times bestsellers. We, of course, would recommend Tigana by Guy Gavriel K., which is our current pick right now, as read by Simon Vance. Actually, there's a pretty long thread in the forums about people who do and do not love the narration of Simon Vance, and I just cannot get behind you not loving it, because it is awesome. And I'm not just saying that because Audible is a sponsor. I'm a huge Simon Vance fan, and it hurts my insides when you say that.
I'm almost done with the audiobook, and I thought it was great. I have no issues with it. What are their issues?
I'll have to go look at the thread. I was going to use it as a barrier sword pick. Oh, you know what? I forgot to say Quick Burns. I'll go back and edit it in later.
You said okay. Quick Burns.
Did I? I don't you think
said,
I
You said let's
did.
Do some Quick Burns, but you didn't pause.
Ah, crud. That's going to be tough. Oh, well, whatever.
Just force it in.
Force it in funny. Awkwardly yeah. later. Yeah. Yes. You're already saying, we already heard the awkward transition. What
hey,
are you talking
guess what
about?
Else is available as an audiobook? You're not going to believe this.
What?
The Exegesis of Philip K. Dick, narrated by Fred Stella.
Nice.
Anyway, you could get any of these audiobooks absolutely free if you're not already an Audible subscriber by going to audiblepodcast.com/sword. That's audiblepodcast.com/sword. Try out a free audiobook. They're amazing. They help me read much more than I could if I wasn't listening to audiobooks.
Absolutely. All right, well, let's move on to the Quick Burns. Sorry, no. Let's move on to Barrier Sword, which is our feedback from the audience.
Sure, are you doing?
All right, so our first thread is from David. He writes about Brandon versus Alberico, first impressions. We learn quickly that the Palm Peninsula of Nine Provinces is split between two powerful sorcerers, with four provinces each and a neutral ninth. There exists an uneasy peace between Brandon and Alberico, with neither willing to pay the price required to gain sole control of the peninsula. Before we get to meet either sorcerer in person, my initial impression was that Brandon was the bad, really evil, terrible guy, while Alberico, apart from being a tyrant, wasn't so bad. Brandon had committed an unforgivable crime, while Alberico was happy to make gestures like letting an exiled duke of one of his conquered provinces be buried in his old seat of power and basically lets everyone get on with their lives. Then, the first time Alberico opens his mouth, and then Brandon as well, I find things are a lot more complex than originally thought. Anyone else share this initial impression before meeting either tyrant in person?
I agree. I mean, obviously, they're both tyrants, and you're trying to understand how much they're really tyrants and how much it's just the perspective of the narrator being unreliable because they're in the oppressed provinces. But I have to say, and I don't want to be spoilery because I'm almost done with the book, but towards the end of the book, I like Brandon a whole lot more than Alberico.
Okay, well, I'm only halfway, so I can't judge too much.
I'm not going to explain why then, because I don't want to be spoilery. But yeah, at the beginning, you're like, Alberico's kind of a jerk. Obviously, he's letting Sandre be buried for purely political reasons. I don't think he's great, but Brandon does kind of come off as like slightly more powerful and therefore slightly more oppressive, especially because of Tigana, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, Alberico's not the one who did to Tigana what was done to Tigana.
And I think that David goes on to kind of answer his own question in a way, or kind of reinforce his own statements. He says, once we get to Brandon's court, we find that he is an entirely different animal to Alberico. Alberico is quite easy to dislike, a power-hungry usurper, driven and consumed by ambition and surrounded by ambitious men. Brandon, on the other hand, is far more complex. I found myself feeling the same internal conflict of Deonora. I want to hate him. I probably should hate him, but I just couldn't. Of all the characters in the book, Brandon is the one that distracts me the most now that I've turned the last page.
And that's something we talked about when we kicked this off on the video show, is the book is about patriotism. It's about the past and how those things can be good, but they can also be used for ill. If you don't let go of the past, if you push your love of your region too far, you come up against uncomfortable truths. And I think that's probably what he's reacting to with Brandon.
Mm-hmm.
It's not clear cut. It's not black and white.
It's not. And I'm loving the Deonora chapter so far. I'm not, like I mentioned, I'm only halfway through, so that hasn't been developed too terribly much yet.
She's a complex character.
Woo. Yeah, I mean, there's some George R. R. Martin shit going down.
I was
very surprised. But anyway, we have another thread started by Nimrod, who is our discussion leader for Tagana.
Yay,
by the way.
Thanks, Nimrod.
He writes, now that we're officially discussing this book.
More wine.
I just had one glass, come on. I want to offer a quick preemptive note to anyone struggling through the first two chapters. It gets better. No, really. Chapters 1 and 2 are purposely meant to be vague. This is to help set up the delivery of the main storyline, and all will be clear by chapter 5. This applies to both the book and the audiobook flavors. If you need more encouragement, please see this thread, which includes discussions from other readers in the same situation. This book is fantastic, and it is worth the initial struggle to get started. If you found yourself among the few that have already overcome the initial two chapters, please chime in below.
And of course, we get chiming in from Tamahome, Vance, Matt, Caroline, lots of people in this thread. And I have to say, I actually went back and re-listened to the prologue after I was over halfway through the book, and it really helped. Because I had no idea who those people were when I was listening to the prologue, and I'd forgotten who they were by the time I should have remembered. So it was very helpful to re-listen to that. And I didn't think chapter one was such a slog, but I definitely didn't feel like I loved the book yet. It's felt very, as I mentioned before, very similar to other things I've read. But as soon as they go to that hunting lodge, wow, it all changes. And it got really good really fast.
I was immediately brought in by the world. Even the first chapter that, you know, didn't make a lot of sense at the time, but I didn't expect it to because that's always how every first chapter is.
Yeah, right. That's true.
And so I was kind of just going with it. I think the second chapter was what confused me, or the first real chapter beyond the prologue. But I love the characters already, and I'm so pulled into the world. This is going to be one of my favorite picks, I think, for a while, depending on how it ends, of course. I don't want another Hyperion situation on my hands. Although I know it won't be because it's standalone, but still.
Well, it was all a dream.
It was all a dream.
Sorry.
I got a major spoiler today that I'm very upset about.
Oh, I'm sorry to hear that.
I clicked on a thread by accident.
Ooh, I hate that. Yeah, that's happened to me before too. Yeah.
So it's not going to ruin the book for me, but it was, in terms of spoilers on a spoiler level of 1 to 5, it was probably like a 3.5. So,
Now I want to know what it is, but I don't want you to spoil everybody in the audience. So.
It had to do with the fool.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
So that was my spoiler. And I was...
Okay.
Did I just give a spoiler by saying that? I hope not.
No. Okay. I don't think so. I know what you mean, having already read that part.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's a spoiler. Let's get away from that and thank Sean for setting up Listopias.
Yay!
Which are a feature on Goodreads that allows you to vote on your favorite books. Now, what he did was brilliant for helping us pick books in the future. He set up a sci-fi and a fantasy Listopia, and you can find the links in our show notes at swordandlaser.com as well as on Goodreads. What you do is you go in and you vote for a book that you would like to read in the future. And this takes it away from the monthly voting. So it's not directly voting for a particular pick. It's saying, I would like this book to be considered. Mm-hmm. And you could take the vote away later if you want. You can add votes, remove votes. You can rate books. Right now, we only have like 20 or so people that voted. So it's not as useful for us in picking the books. But if we get most of you that are on there, thousands of people, this could be very helpful. Because as librarians, some of you can remove the books as we read them, and it will be just the books that are most loved by the audience. And we're not saying this is going to be determinative. We're not going to always pick the book that's at the top of the Listopia, necessarily. We'll still have polls, and we'll still have reasons to pick books. Frankly, in December, we're going to do The Hobbit, because the movie's coming out.
So you know that.
Right.
There you go. You know that's coming.
But this will help us when we create those polls and consider the books immensely. So go check it out. And thanks to Sean.
I should take Dune off because we already read Dune.
Oh, yeah. One of the librarians. Are you a librarian? See, I'm not actually a librarian.
I don't know if I can. Can I edit the Listopia?
If you're a librarian, supposedly you can remove books from the list. Where do you see? I don't even see Dune.
It's in there for sure.
Oh, it's far down. Yeah.
We'll have to figure
The Forever War should be removed too.
Okay. Yeah. But there's some great stuff on here. I mean, you guys really want to read Old Man's War.
Well, 23 of the 10,000 people in the...
Well, okay, but only 86 people have voted on the list. And it's all, it's Sean and Nimrod and Nick and Josh and Tomahome and, you know, all the usual suspects.
It's the influencers.
The influencers. They are driving this truck, people. They're driving this bus.
Don't vote.
And if you don't like it, you better get in there.
But it's not a democracy. Veronica is a dictator, so, you know.
That's true.
This only has slight influence.
You know, I have found it amusing that the forums consider me to be the one who is the one to please. I've noticed in a few threads they're like, "Don't anger Veronica; she won't choose your pick." I'm like, "Why am I the bad guy or the good guy, depending
I'm
on how you look at it?"
Prime Minister, that's all.
I guess I have made a few more executive decisions in the past. I think you lost your privilege after, you know. Lem.
Yes, my queen.
Yes, mom. Stop calling me mom, Tom. That's weird.
Don't call me mom. That's so strange.
We've also got a fantasy dystopia, which I haven't checked out yet, but I just clicked on. So I'll look through that. I'm sure there's going to be some awesome picks there as well for the sword side of things. Assassin's Apprentice is number one right now with 15 votes, which is one of my favorite books of all time. So I can't complain about that. First. See, they're trying to... They're playing to my interests. They know. They know better. So let's talk a little bit about movies. Did you see Prometheus?
I did.
So I'm not going to see it because I'm scared of movies.
I don't. Yeah, I can't say you won't be scared if you go see it.
It's got some scary parts.
It's not as scary as Alien.
Okay,
but. It definitely has some scary parts. There's more tense parts than really, truly frightening parts.
Mm-hmm. Sporadic Reviews agrees with me. He says, so I don't really do gore. What's the level of gore in this?
It's actually not that gory. There's some gore.
Tim says, it's not huge. It's rated 15 in the UK, which is much lower than the earlier Alien films.
Yeah. It's not a gore fest. It's not a blood fest. But there is some disgusting stuff. So it's not clean either, but...
Bleh. So it's not getting very good reviews.
Yeah, the problem with it is that it has plot holes you could drive a truck through, mm-hmm. but it's so pretty at the beginning of the movie that you don't care. You're like, okay, I can deal with that. Oh, I'll forgive that. This is a great movie, and it's fun, and you like the characters. And then it gets about halfway through, and you finally just run out of patience, and it all falls apart, and some of the script doesn't really make sense, and Leo... Laporte, who I work with, work for a twit, said he felt like it turned into a horror movie, and that's where it went wrong in the second half. And in some ways, I definitely agree with him. It went wrong in the second half, and I can see what he's saying about it being a horror movie. To me, it's partly that, but partly that the plot just takes some turns that don't make any sense, and you haven't built up enough character identification with some of the characters to really care what happens, and it just kind of loses you.
Okay, well, that's good to know. Maybe I'll watch it on Netflix.
It's really beautiful.
Is this the kind of thing that I should see in the theater because it's so?
Yeah, if you're gonna see it, you should see it in the theater because it's so cinematography is so good and the direction is so good, and the acting is good. It's actually probably editing and script writing. And I hate to say that because I love Damon Lindelof and he co-wrote the script. That's where it lost me.
Okay. That's where it lost you. I see what you did there.
Oh, yeah. I didn't even see what I did there until you pointed it out.
So do we need to do much more of a book check-in? I mean, we are... Okay, so for those of you who may not know, we are reading Tagana by Guy Gavriel Kay. It's excellent. It's not available on Kindle in the U.S., but it is kind of available in the Kindle in the U.S. I think there's a few threads and Goodreads about how to make that happen.
Yeah. We don't have to do much more of a book check-in because we talked about it so much in Barrier Sword.
Yeah.
But yeah, we will wrap it up on the video show on June 22nd, which is the episode which we have our guest, George R. R. Martin. And we just launched the July book poll up on the website, at Goodreads. So go to goodreads.com to the Sword and Laser group. And it's stuck to the top of the general section, Leviathan Wakes, The Martian Chronicles, Altered Carbon, and Chung Kuo, The Middle Kingdom are the four books up for vote.
I voted for Leviathan Wakes.
Right now, Leviathan Wakes and The Martian Chronicles are in a dead heat.
Ooh.
Altered Carbon about halfway back, and only three people voting for Chung Kuo, The Middle Kingdom.
Hmm. How many people
that's early.
So far?
It's early days. All this will have changed by the time you hear this podcast.
That's a good point. Interesting. Yeah, you guys, if you don't like what we've been reading, you guys got to get in there and vote and make suggestions. I mean, we are doing this for you. Like, we want you guys to be excited about what we're reading.
I mean, it's
and
wrong.
What
it's a dictatorship, but she's doing it for you.
I mean, overall, I will overrule everything in the favor of what I want to read, but I still like to know what you want, just for fun, funsies, yeah, mostly.
Exactly.
Let's read this email. This comes from Shaul from Israel. He writes, "Hello, Tom and Veronica. In your last episode, this is the video episode, actually, you mentioned that you notice that fantasy seems to be more popular in later years than sci-fi, after which Veronica immediately dismissed the notion and attributed it to the popularity of Game of Thrones. I did not do that. But it's not true. Although Game of Thrones is extremely popular, its popularity is a symptom and not a cause. It's a well-known fact that sci-fi has been slowing down as a genre for 30 years, and in the same time, the fantasy genre has been on the rise, and it seems that during the last decade, these trends have become more prominent." I didn't say that.
Well, no, you didn't. What you said was you thought maybe some people perceived fantasy as being more popular because Game of Thrones was on right now and getting a lot of attention. And I think that's fair. I think it does distort your view.
But I also said that we've seen very prominent sci-fi shows,
yes,
like Battlestar Galactica do very well.
But that's television. And also, name a current sci-fi television show that's doing well, because Battlestar has been off for a couple of years.
Doctor Who?
Doctor Who's doing okay. So that's a good one. Eureka's getting canceled.
I was just about to say Eureka.
And the major networks are not bringing a lot. So I don't know. I think you're right that sci-fi is not on the wane. And I think maybe even Shaul
here. Aren't that many fantasy shows coming out too. And there's a bunch of new sci-fi shows coming out for next year.
But there's a lot of fantasy like stuff like Grimm and Once Upon a Time. This is all TV. Talking books, there's plenty of sci-fi books being written and being published, but the ones that tend to get the attention do seem to be fantasy slightly more often. The Patrick Rothfusses, the Joe Abercrombies, they tend to get a little more attention than the James S.A. Coreys or the John Scalzis.
All right, well,
I don't think it's as pronounced as some people were saying on the Goodreads.
Okay, Ready Player One, that's kind of sci-fi.
Well, there you go. Right there. Kind of sci-fi.
Well, it's more sci-fi than fantasy.
Yeah. No, for sure.
All right. Well, okay. Maybe it's a sign at the time somehow. I don't know what that sign
would be. I think it just all goes through cycles.
Yeah.
Personally.
You're probably right.
And sometimes fantasy's on the rise, sometimes sci-fi's on the rise.
Well,
and sometimes they're both.
Audio listeners, if you have an idea of why you think that perhaps sci-fi has been waning in the public opinion in the past, I don't know, 20 years?
Or
15 years? Or not, if you have an argument why that is not actually happening, let us know. feedback@swordandlaser.com. And if you want to get in touch with us, that is the email address as well. Our web address is swordandlaser.com. All of our discussions happen on Goodreads. And if you want to call, leave us a voicemail. I forgot to check the voicemail this week, but that doesn't mean you can't call it. The phone number is 415-779-6736. That is 415-7-SWORD-6. Any last words, Tom?
I submit to your will.
Dictator! Good night.